information. Now, here's Mr. Russell. He's going to do step 12, and he's done such a great job for us, and we really appreciate you coming to the one-on-one club.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found a way to have a drink since January 25th. I believe that's the right day. 1981, and I'm grateful. Grateful to God. Grateful to a lot of people in my life that helped me, and I want to talk a little bit about those people. And I always like coming up here. You know, I mean, whenever I do the steps someplace, I like doing them. But this group, you know, I really enjoy coming here. It's a little bit of a trek, but that's okay. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And somehow I feel the farther you have to travel and the more work you have to do in getting there, you know, the better it is. And I do appreciate your enthusiasm and your kindness. I really do. And I hope this has helped a few people. You know, I think it has, but I know it's helped me. And that's a big thing, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And I'm starting on Tuesday, I guess it's Tuesday the 18th, September 18th, the steps a little bit down south from here at the 12-step house, right? 12-step house, and I've done it there before. And that's a real enthusiastic group, you know. And so I saw Debbie. I know she's going to start. And she said, you know, you remember me? And from 15 years ago. Yeah. She's great. She's great. You know, she's a famous author. She reminded me that 15 years ago we had a conversation. This is her story. I'm not going to tell, but she had a conversation about writing the book, and she wrote the book. And I haven't seen any royalty checks. She got a little nervous when I talked about that. No, but it's good. It's good to see it. It's good to see it. It's always good to see people, you know, that you run into, you know, over the years and that kind of stuff. And I'm so grateful. You know, they asked Bill Wilson once, what do you think of people that don't drink and don't go to meetings? He says, I have no use for them. It's reportedly, he said, I have no use for them because they have no gratitude. Because they have no gratitude. Can you imagine that? An alcoholic without gratitude? An alcoholic who's here just for themselves. I got mine. I'm sober. I got my job back. I got my wife back. I don't need to go to meetings anymore. Can you imagine that? That'd be, what kind of attitude would that be? You know, in the big book, and I'll read a few things in the big book, and then I want to talk about a few experiences as far as the 12 step is concerned. And I know you can talk about practicing principles and stuff like that. I think I just feel like talking about classic 12 step work tonight and that kind of service, you know, that kind of deal. Because, you know, they say nothing ensures sobriety more than intensive work with alcoholics. Intensive work with alcoholics. I don't know, maybe we'll get into reading to what they talk about when they say intensive work with alcoholics. They map it out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, there's a line I'm one of these guys, over the years, you know, I've evolved, you know. I mean, you know, my mother told me, she was an AA before I was, she said, your story's going to change. I mean, I guess it does. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, helpless, hopeless, drunk. You know, I didn't know anything about sobriety, and now I got 31 years. And man, I'd like to think that your story changes a little, that, you know, you get some, what Bill Wilson calls emotional sobriety. He said a real problem was unhealthy dependencies, you know, or, you know, in my church we call it idolatry, being dependent upon the wrong things, worried about the wrong stuff, you know, hooking your sobriety and your serenity onto something that the government can take away or can walk out the door or, you know, something that you can lose or something that can rust or get into a car accident or, you know, money or something like that kind of stuff that we're so, I guess we're more addicted. We're as addicted to that stuff, aren't we? I didn't know I was addicted to alcohol. Did you know you were addicted to alcohol? I didn't know that until the bitter end. I didn't know I was addicted to women. Did you know men or sex? I didn't know I was addicted to cars and bars and money and clothes. I didn't know I was addicted to everything I ran into in the entire world, and I'm like immersed in it. I'm in a soup of stuff I'm addicted to. I'm just sort of floating around in addiction heaven here, you know. And And I come in here and I don't even want to give up the alcohol, but okay, I'll give it. And then you tell me I have to give up my friends, and then you tell me I have to give up the places, and then you tell me I have to give up the gals, and I got to give up the romance, and I got to give up the cars and the bars and the money and the houses and all that stuff that is my driving force. The driving force, the thing that drives me, my life force, my life energy. You tell me I got to give up that stuff? What, are you crazy? And so they went, that's a tough deal. That must have something to do with them old ideas. They say the result is nil until you let go absolutely. That must be why there is, sometimes you'll hear somebody with 20 years say, I'm hanging in there. God, I get these conversations. There must be something wrong with me. I'm starting to think there's something wrong with me. You know, I'm an alcoholic. You know, if I have 50,000 people tell me something, even 3 or 4 people, I start thinking there's something wrong with me. Everybody I talk to in Alcoholics Anonymous, how are things going? Okay. No, they're wonderful. They're not wonderful, Russell. You know, they're okay. You know, I'm making it today. You know, how are things going? How are things going? I'm hanging in there. You're not hanging in there. It's incredible. It's not incredible, Russell. You know, as a matter of fact, it's really kind of lousy. But I'm not drinking. I'm hanging in there. You know what I mean? I mean, like, it must be me. I must be smoking something that I'm not aware of. There must be I'm thinking there's something wrong with me. You know, I mean, really, I'm starting to think it's me. Because everybody around me has got a problem. And even when I tell them, I say, you don't have a problem. Life is unbelievable. They say, Russell, life isn't unbelievable. I've got problems, you know. And I say, you don't have any problems. Everything is great. They start telling me about this, and they start telling me about that, and they start telling me about problems they have with money and this, and I got the same things, but I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. So I might be delusional. They say we're delusional. Maybe I'm you know what? I'm tripolar. You know, some people are bipolar. Well, I'm tripolar. I have these violent swings between happy, joyous, and free. It's terrible. I'm going to think I'm going to have to see a psychiatrist, get one of them pills to sort of calm that shit down. You know what I mean? Stop that deal from happening. I don't know. But that's what I want. I want to experience what much of heaven and be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which I have not even dreamed. I want that stuff they promised me in the book. You know, all that fear stuff disappearing and that worry stuff disappearing and, you know, being... I want everything they promised. I want that... Whatever they got between 1935 and 1939, I want that stuff. That was before the drugs started getting watered down. I want the real AA drug, the stuff that those guys were sucking on, you know, before the world got a hold of it and they started worried about people's feelings, you know what I mean? Before we all got worried about our inner child and you can't say that and that'll hurt somebody's feelings and they'll walk out the door and, you know, if you say that, I want the industrial strength in your face. You know, if you don't like it, why don't you try a little drinking? You know, that's what they say. If you don't like it, why don't you just try some John Barleycorn? We're not going to argue with you. Maybe you're not ready. Get down on your knees. Maybe you're not ready. I want something. Now, I didn't necessarily want that stuff. I got it. I was lucky to run into these guys. I got that stuff. Whether I wanted it enough, I got it. Or not, I got it. I don't know when it was I started really focusing in on the stuff that was going on between 1935 and 1939. It's available to everybody. I have guys call me up today because, you know, I always talk about Dr. Bob and the good old timers. I'm always quoting from Dr. Bob and the good old timers. And I have guys that I either sponsor today, guys, you know, there'll be guys that listen to this thing in California or different places in New York, and they started reading the book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. James was telling me you were on a plane, and you just happened to say, well, what the heck, I might as well pick up the book. That's the way alcoholics are. They hear about a book for like 10 years, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and they say, man, that's a good book, Dr. Bob. That's the way we are, right? And then 10 years down the road, we got nothing better to do as this. Oh, what the hell, I'll read the book, you know what I mean? And then you read the book and say, why didn't I read this 10 years ago? You know, I don't know, that's just the way we are. We're always like a day late and a dollar short, you know? It's not that we're not told about it, it's just that we're told about it, but that would require actually, you know, like working or spending money or like extra credit, and I'm not in this for extra credit, but you know, something happens and we all of a sudden we read this book and it like blows our mind. And all of a sudden, we start reading about AA between 1935 and 1939. And we start looking at AA today. And I'm not putting down AA today. you know, unless you think I am, whatever. I'm just being factual. And we start looking at AA today, and some people sense that it's changed. It's changed. Well, listen, society's changed. Isn't that right? You know, a lot of stuff has changed, you know, between 1930. A lot of things that people felt were valuable, that were important in 1935, you know, it's not that such a big deal now. You know, we sort of laugh about that. We snicker about that stuff now. You know, stuff that we think were, you know, that people, you know, were really loyal to in 1935, we sort of laugh at that stuff. It's sort of stupid, you know? But you see, it was right after, it was when they got sober between 1935 and 1939, and then they wrote a book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I got the book right there. It's not sold in a lot of AA rooms. It's conference-approved material, which means they published it. It's legitimate. And right after they wrote that book, I mean, right, not that I wrote them, but right after 1939, between 1935 and 1939, they wrote a book. And in the book, they said this. It's our basic text. They said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And the path they were talking about, you ready for this? This will blow your mind. Was everything they were doing between 1935 and 1939. And nobody reads that stuff. Everybody gets sober in here based upon everything that happened after 1939. And the book they wrote was all about what they did prior to 1939. And everything they actually did to get what they got in here, they said, you do what we did, you'll get what we got, happened between 35 and 39, and all that stuff is in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. So you may want to just sort of check out that book and see whether or not it, you know, whatever dimension you're in, it may rocket you into a different, you may start looking at things a little bit differently. You know, if you've been staying sober based upon the, quote, wisdom of the rooms, end of quote, how you're supposed to speak, you know, what's supposed to happen, you might read that book of what they did between 1935 and 1939 and hear somebody talking from the podium and just saying stuff and saying, that doesn't match up. That's not the deal. You know, you may be staying sober and dealing with stuff that you think is AA. It may not be AA at all. It's just the wisdom of the rooms. It's just some guy's opinion. That's why I feel, and I felt, that not only is it important to give testimony, but it's important also to talk about the books and talk about the literature. Because if we didn't have this literature, and if it wasn't passed down, it would be like the game telephone. You know the game telephone? You whisper in somebody's ear, and then they whisper in somebody's ear, and then 50, 60, 75, how long has AA been going down? Going on? How long has AA been, what is it, start 1935, okay? So how far, what are we, 2000, what are we talking about? 75 years?
77.
And then 77 years, 77 years down the road, passed on through word of mouth, word of mouth, word of mouth. Nobody's reading the material. Nobody's reading the book. Nobody's reading Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And next thing you know, people are just talking in Alcoholics Anonymous what they think the program is about and what it's not about. And of course it's this and of course, and it's not that. And all of a sudden they're like lost in space. And somebody starts saying, what did they do between 1935 and 1939? And nobody has a clue. They think what they were doing between 1935 and 1939 is what we're doing right now in the discussion meetings. You know, in the banquets, you know what I mean, where everybody's having fun. They think that's what they're doing. They may have been doing some other things. You might want to find out what their attitude was. You know, it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a part in here where who was it? I think it was it Ebbie Thatcher? No, it was Roland Hazard. Goes to see Dr. Young. I think it's in There Is a Solution. Dr. Young says, because he can't stop drinking, because he put himself he went into a treatment program, you know. And Roland Hazard was a rich guy. So, you know, he was a very rich guy in America. His family was very rich, the Hazards. And they sent him to a psychiatrist. Now, I'm not talking about like Del Rey. Like in Austria, you know what I mean? That was like Dr. Young was like up there with Freud, you know, and they sent him to him, and he sort of worked on it. And he stayed sober. He was hospitalized and stayed at Dr. Young's, you know, sanitarium, Happydale, you know. And he stayed there for about a year, and he stayed sober. And he says, being armed now, he says, now knowing the inner workings of his mind, he was convinced that drinking was impossible. And the next line is, nevertheless, he was drunk within 2 weeks. Because he got out of the sanitarium, he was on his way home, and he stopped in Paris. And that was the end of that deal, you know what I mean? And so he went back to the doctor, you know, because he had a slip, right? So he went to the doctor, and the doctor says, he says, is there any answer to this thing? Is there any answer? This is that part of our material. You probably read it. It says, yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Did you know that? Did you know that people were getting sober and completely changing their lives and becoming new people, new creations, just completely new? Did you know that it was happening since early times? Even before they had like sponsors and step meetings. Even before alcohol, did you know even before the big book, whatever this power is we talk about, was going on changing people's lives? Yeah, it was happening. That's what Dr. Young says. This bad was happening. And Dr. Young says, here and there, once in a while, that's sort of like AA. Here and there, once in a while. Here and there, once in a while. You know, a lot of people get sober. They stay sober for a little while, and then they drink again, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. Sometimes they never drink again, but they're just living lives of quiet desperation. They're sort of hanging in there. And every once in a while, it's just wonderful all the time. It's just unbelievable all the time. It's just the rocket ship ride all the time. Here and there, once in a while, it sort of happens in here. You know, it's not just, you know, one day at a time, hanging in there, you know, I'm making it, you know, went through another flipping day, you know, and got to get to a meeting. Sometimes it just becomes wonderful. It just becomes unbelievable. It's just like he says here. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what's called a vital spiritual experience. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. That's a scientific word, you know, it's sort of like miracle. He can't explain it. But he knows it happens. He sees it happen. You can't deny it happens in some people's lives. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. I'm going to tell you something. I think it's an incredible thing when you stop drinking. You know, when you say you have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. A seemingly hopeless state of mind. He says, these 100 men have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I know what a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body is. You know, I need a drink. That's living a life where you can't stop drinking and you can't envision a life without drinking. That's a big deal. But even after that miracle happens, and it happens just about really for everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, it tries this thing, everybody sort of gets sober. Even after that happens, then you learn that the drinking, as horrible as it was, wasn't even the problem. It was the symptom of the disease. And the disease has to do with perceptions, and it has to do with emotions, and it has to do with it's a spiritual disease. And then all of a sudden you have to accept the fact that you drank because you hated being sober. And it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontent, unless they can again experience sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And then you have to accept the fact that these emotional display, you know, everybody who slips, no matter how much time they have in AA, you could have 20 years. Everybody who slips and drinks after getting sober in AA, every person that slips right before they take that drink is sober. Did you know that? Did you know that before somebody slips, before they take the drink, they're sober? So I guess the problem has something to do with sobriety. The problem isn't the drinking, because once the drinking happens, that's the end of that deal. Just send them the detox. You know, I guess the problem has something to do, I guess you can be sober and still not sober. You know, if sober has to do with huge emotional rearrangements and displacements and changing, I guess you can stop drinking and still not round that curve. You know, it's like firing a rocket up into space so that it'll start orbiting, you know? You got to have escape velocity so it's strong enough to break the gravitational pull of the Earth. Otherwise, you know what happens? It falls back to Earth and it crashes. I guess you can come in here and you could fire that rocket, you know what I mean? And you could fire it real hard and get it really all the way up there, but just not quite escape the gravitational pull of alcoholism and eventually fall back to Earth. And this is what Dr. Jung says. He says, here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what's called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Huge emotional, we're not just talking about little stuff. We're not talking about you go to a psychiatrist for 50 years and you feel a little bit better. You know what I mean? You know, we're talking about huge emotional displacements, rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes. We're not even talking about drinking at this point. We're talking about the stuff you hear at discussion meetings. You all go to discussion meetings? We're talking about the stuff. Tom says no. Good for you, Tom. Huge emotional displacements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes. This is what we're working on now. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men and women, I'll add, are suddenly cast to one side and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. He says, in fact, I've been trying to do this with you. I've never been able to do it with an alcoholic. Never been able to do it with an alcoholic. I've never been able to do it. And then he talks to him about finding God. So what's the driving force? What's the driving, guiding force in your life? What's the driving, guiding force in your life? Because if you can answer that question, if you haven't had these huge emotional, in other words, if you're going to them discussion meetings, I'm not putting them down, or if you're talking, if you find that you're worried about and talking about and dealing with the same crapola that you've been dealing with for the last 5 or 10 or 15 years, and it hasn't changed and it seems immovable, maybe you ought to look at what's driving your life. Maybe you ought to look at what's the driving force of your life. Is it just not to drink? Maybe you ought to look what's the driving force of your life. What's your motivation? And then maybe you ought to look at what they were talking about between 1935 and 1939. And see what they were talking about. And then maybe you'll look at the big book. When you read the big book, you'll read it differently. Maybe when you read what they were talking about what books they were reading between 1935 and 1939, and what they were actually doing between 1935 and 1939, the prayer time, the silent time, and the books they were reading, maybe you'll read the stuff they were reading. And then when you read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it'll mean a completely different thing to you than it means right now. Maybe you'll start looking at this book and you'll read it and say, man, I never saw any of that stuff. I never even realized what they were talking about. I skipped over the most important stuff here. I never really understood it. You know, maybe you'll stop being, and I'm not pointing at anybody here, you'll stop being a dilettante. We talked about dilettantes. You know, people that are sort of like dabbling in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not people that are intensively working with alcoholics or intensively involved in this thing. So in any event, and I don't know why some people do this and some people don't. I'm not saying people are bad or good or anybody's any better than anybody else. I'm just so fortunate that I ran into men that were into this deal. I got nothing original. Everything I have here is either from the big book or from literature or from some guy I bounced into, some Eskimo, some guy who was talking about this stuff, the same stuff I'm talking about. You know, it says right here, I want to read a couple of things and then I'm going to talk about a few experiences having to do with this. This is on page 191. This is Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. And I've said that I've used this so many times, but these guys are talking about, this is, you know what they're talking about? These guys are talking about pre-1939. Do you know the first few stories in the big book? They took out most of them. You know, we're dealing with a different edition now. You know, they're talking about the stuff they were doing before 1939. This is the stuff. It says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness. I thought something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something that I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, this isn't Henrietta Seiberling, it's the other Henrietta Dodson. Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me. The Lord has been so wonderful to me. He didn't pussyfoot around. So wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. Bill Wilson was filled with gratitude. Gratitude to God. I was talking about somebody today about how important faith is. You know, without faith, you can't. Without faith in God, how can you have gratitude? No, that's a rhetorical question. Without faith in God, how can you have gratitude? Because without faith in God, you know, then if you get better and you get well and you get fantastic and you get everything that AA has to offer, if it doesn't come from God, then you got it because you deserved it. You got it because you're God. You got it because you worked for it. You got it because you did what you're supposed to do. You followed directions. Or you got it because you're entitled to get it. Or how about this? You got it because you're just plain lucky. You just lucked out. It's your lucky day. And then next Wednesday, you're drinking because it was your unlucky day. They took the money away. You know what I mean? I mean, where is gratitude? I used to have a guy in old times who said, I got an attitude of gratitude that gives me an aptitude for living. You know what? You know how great it is to have gratitude? And the kind of gratitude I'm talking about is the kind of gratitude Bill Dodson's talking about that he saw in Bill Wilson that he adopted when he said, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about and telling other people. His driving force, Bill Wilson's driving force, was to go out and tell other people what God had done for him. His driving force, his entire life. You know what causes a guy to give up everything? Dr. Bob Mills, give up everything and do nothing but work with drunks for the rest of his life and write books and do that? Because his driving force was to tell other alcoholics what the Lord had done for him. That was his driving force. Now, that may not be something you hear in AA meetings today. You understand what I'm saying? Because a lot of people don't read this stuff and what happened between 1935 and 1939. But that was the driving. It wasn't to get back the car. It wasn't to get back the wife. It wasn't to get back all this stuff. It wasn't to, you know, whatever the stuff is. The driving force was because he was grateful that God had lifted this disease from him. And he knew God had done it. He had that white light. He knew it was God. He knew it wasn't the psychiatrist. I thought, this is what Henry Dodson, he says, I think I had the answer. Bill was very, very, this is what he says. This is not for me. This is what Bill, the guy who listened to Bill Wilson, who knew Bill Wilson personally, between 1935 and 1939, this is what he says. He says, I thought I had the answer. I have the answer. Here's the answer. I'm giving you all the answer. I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it, and he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program for me. And you want to know something? Bill Wilson had that deal. It was the driving force of his life. It totally rearranged everything in his life and turned him into a different person, and Henry Dodson caught it too. And not only Henry Dodson, the guy who wrote, you know, the story, all these guys that wrote the story, the guy that wrote the story, he sold himself short, guy. Because he says, these last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I'll always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. Now, this is how he closes. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. This guy ain't at any discussion meetings talking about his problems. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods, it's not great. But I have a fortune in friendships, in courage, in self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing. This is a 1939 guy. This is what they were doing in 1939. This is what they were talking about in 1939. This was AA in 1939. I have gained the greatest thing according to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust, where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. That's 1939 AA. I owe everything. I lay everything in my life. I lay myself on the altar. I am forfeit. My life is forfeit to God. It's no longer my life. I had my life. I was the captain of my soul and my destiny. I blew it. I was on an alcoholic scrap heap. I was saved because of a gracious God. My life is forfeit to Him, i.e. third step. I turn my will, I turn my life over to You. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. If you sincerely take this position, all sorts of remarkable things will follow. Being all-powerful, He'll give you everything you need if you stay close to Him and perform His work well. I can tell you this. The guys in 1939 would understand exactly what I'm talking about. Because that's the kind of AA they were dealing with in 1939. Is that what you're hearing in meetings right now? Or are you hearing people that are scared to talk about that because people will laugh at them? Now, I'm not going to put down meetings, because I think actually through meetings and the meetings we have today, and I don't care how watered down it gets and how much they worry about blowing away the new guy or anything like that, for some reason, somehow, some way, there are still people that come in and actually take this a notch higher. Bring this up like a notch higher, you know what I mean? Somehow they sense something, they see something, they want something, and they go for it. So the fact of the matter is it's just like they say in the sixth step. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. Okay, you got sober, you did a third step, you did a fourth step, you did a fifth step. Now let's see whether you're willing, like it says in the step itself, whether you're willing to do whatever you have to do to recreate yourself in the image and likeness of God, of your Creator. Perfect. Shoot for perfection. Let's say if you're willing to shoot for more, or you're just willing to settle. If you're just willing, that's what the sixth step is all about. That's what we're talking about. And somehow, some way, people catch this deal. I don't know how it is. It's a God thing. I don't know why everybody doesn't catch it. You know, I mean, it's a powerful world out there. There's powerful forces out there. You can't leave an AA room without running into billboards and movies and TV that tell you you're a loser and you're nothing. You know, if you can't have sex every night, or, you know, they're pushing pills, they're pushing everything on you possible to let you know that the reason you're a loser and you're not good is because you don't have a sexual relationship, a romantic relationship. You know, you don't have a car, you don't have a Ferrari. I mean, you can't get from here to your house without seeing billboards that are saying, if you don't have this, if you don't have that, you're a nothing. It's a wonder anybody stays sober in this deal. Nobody's talking about the stuff we talk about in here, that I'm talking about tonight out there or on the TV. They're not even talking about the stuff I'm talking about tonight in AA. They're not even talking about it in here. You know what I mean? And if you go to discussion meetings, what are they talking about? They're talking about how I don't have the stuff. Or they're taking the stuff away from me. Or when am I going to get my stuff? Or why don't I have the stuff? It's even in here. It's like we're infected with this disease. And Dr. Young and Bill Wilson and all these guys are saying, you just have to look to Him. You give everything to Him. Ambassador in chains. The Apostle Paul said, I'm an ambassador in chains. I'm an ambassador for Him in chains. I'm chained. They just killed this ambassador. I'll die. I'll do what I have to do because I owe it all to him. Because my life is forfeit. He's got my life now. It's all about him. You know? And you know the only reason they get mad at stuff like that in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know why they get mad at stuff like that? Because they don't want to do it. Because if I'm right, then they got to do that stuff, and they don't want to turn their will and their life over to God. What, you think it's just a matter of getting on your knees and say a simple prayer and do that, and you don't think it even touches your life after that? You get on your knees, you say the prayer, you do the four step, and then sort of like, well, I don't go to church, or I don't go this, or I don't do that, or I don't do that, and then you just live your sort of like existence, your AA existence with your closed little AA rooms, and you think that's the deal? Well, that may be the deal for you. Just don't expect to get. Listen, here's the deal. Nobody gets away with anything. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. You know, you don't pay $100. You don't go to the car store and you pay $100 and expect a brand new Mercedes. Okay, just don't expect to. It says if you do what we did, you'll get what we got. Just don't expect to get what they got by not doing what they did. They didn't say just do whatever the hell you want to do, any way you want to do it, and you'll get it anyway. That's not what they said. Just don't be babies about it. You know, be adults about it. And understand, hey, listen, I'll say, and you know, that's okay. That's okay. You know, hey, listen, some guys, it's perfectly okay. You just go through your life and live a life of sort of quiet desperation, and it's not so bad. And sometimes you have a good time, a nice dinner or something like that. You know, maybe you marry somebody, you have a couple kids, and there's something missing, but you die one day, and that's it. You know, that's the deal. And you haven't had a drink, and they're giving you these medallions, you know, and people are clapping for you, and everything. And that's okay. You know, it's a free country. You know, but there are some people, but there's so much more. And you'll run into these people. And, you know, the people that I ran into, you know, like, Bob Sullivan and, you know, Ray O'Keefe and Joe Snyder, Eddie Edwards, you know, and some of the people I ran into in here. Man, and these guys I hung out with. And, you know, and you know what? Love is so important. They showed me so much love as they were kicking me in the ass. You know what I mean? Somehow, some way, alcoholics have, guys that are imbued with this deal have a way of sponsoring people or dealing with people where they love you so much they'll hurt your feelings. I can't even explain it. They'll tell you you're full of shit when you're full of shit. You know, I mean, they'll tell you. They'll risk, you know, you're going out there, you're leaving and everything because they're so concerned about your soul, they're not worried about your feelings. See, they're so concerned about your soul, they don't give a crap about your feelings. And there are other people that are so self-centered and so still selfish and so codependent that their whole life is wrapped around what will the people in the 101 group think about me? So they'll hold back on saying things because the people may not like them. You understand what I'm saying? So they're more worried, really, you know, because, you know, if you laugh, that's good. You know, God forbid you should get upset. You should upset somebody. And, you know, I don't know how that works out and how that happens, but I know I ran into a lot of these guys, you know. And you know what, they would tell me things I didn't want to hear. Can you imagine that, being an alcoholic in this venue and being told things you don't want to hear? And from the very beginning, they got me involved in service. From the very beginning, they got me involved in service. Unbelievable. You think I wanted to do service? You kidding me? I'm the guy, you know, I told you, if the remote control breaks in my house, if I can't find the remote control, I ain't watching TV. But you really think I'm going to get up off the bed and change the channel or put the volume up or down? Listen, I'm the guy, I'll get on my cell phone. I'll call my wife from the kitchen. I'll say, could you come in here and turn up the TV? I've done that shit, you know what I mean? I'm embarrassed to say I've done that stuff, you know what I mean? That's just in case anybody here actually thinks I'm well. I wouldn't want anybody to actually go out of here thinking, you know, that guy's actually got it, he's well, you know what I mean? Not quite, you know? Not quite. I still got a few problems. I still got a few things I got to sort out. You know what I mean? Few issues, as they say. You know, but that's the way it was. I was like, so you know, when you run into these guys, and you've gone to an AA meeting, and he says, okay, now we're going to go to detox, or now we're going to go here, or now we're going to sponsor this, now we're going to sponsor that, and you got to deal with these guys. You got to sponsor these guys. You know what I mean? And you know, sponsoring alcoholics, they're deadly. They're deadly. They're horrible people. You know what I mean? You like, you know, listen, if you like alcoholics, that's because you haven't sponsored enough of them. You know, it's easy to come to a room like this where you don't get involved with them, you know what I mean? And you don't have to listen to their bullshit you don't understand, you know? You can sort of like come here, drink coffee, yuck it up and everything and say, man, aren't alcoholics great? You know what I mean? You need to get involved. You need to sponsor these guys. Then you understand what alcohol is. Hey, you need to sponsor these people. You know, I can tell you this, when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said and done. Watch out for the guy who says, I'm really going to do it this time. Huh. You know, because you're so codependent, you'll actually believe that shit. Yeah. The guy who swears on his mother's life that he'll be at the meeting. That you weren't going to go to, but the only reason you're going there is because he's going to be there, and you don't want to disappoint him, and he doesn't. Well, you know, I'm going to tell you. Listen, I'm going to tell you a little. Listen, I don't care whether you call this Al-Anon, but I've sponsored enough people to know. I don't go anywhere because I believe that somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous is going to meet me there. You know what I mean? I don't set my life. You know, I figured out how to sponsor people. It works like this. This is where I'm going to be. If you want to talk to me, this is where I'll be. You know, some they don't show up. You know, there's nothing to be upset about. I don't give assignments. Once in a while, I give. You know why? Because I'm the kind of guy, when I start giving assignments, I like expect that they're going to be done. And the next thing I'll know, I'll say something to the guy like this. Why didn't you do your assignment? And I'll worry about whether he did his assignment. He's not worried whether he does his assignment. And I might even get mad at him for not doing his assignment. And then I get mad at him. Maybe I'll fire him. Maybe I'll have to call my sponsor. Do you think I would have fired him? Maybe. And think of all the thought that's going into my happy, joyous, and free life about this crazy alcoholic that could give a shit about me. You know what I mean? I've now spent hours. Why didn't he do it? Why do you think he hasn't done it? I've called my sponsor. I don't know what to do with this guy. He says he wants to do it. He doesn't want to do it. You know what I mean? And then I got to figure out whether I'm going to fire him or not. What do you mean fire him? He's going to take himself out. You know what I mean? You don't have to fire him. He's going to fire himself. Because I'm so codependent, you know. I mean, I'll tell you. And then you turn into the worst thing possible, like an Al-Anon type person. You know what I mean? And what if it gets so bad that you got to go to Al-Anon? You know what I mean? I mean, how bad can you even imagine something worse than that? You know? Well, you know. But I mean, really. So you know. I mean, and it's like, you know, it's like, hey, you know what Bill Wilson said to Dr. Bob? I love that part where they visit that guy in the bed. I can't remember. I think it was the guy in the bed. It was Dotson. It was that Dotson, the guy in the bed. And he says to him, look, we have this deal. You know what I mean? And I'm not reading directly from the book, but I'm pretty much quoting. He says, we have this deal. We take it around. We think it works for people having alcoholism. We don't want to waste. We don't want to take up your time. We don't want to, you know, get into your life. We don't want to mess with you. But we have this deal. If you're interested, we have to help you. But if you're not interested, we'll not waste your time. We'll not waste your time. They didn't beg them. They didn't put, we'll not waste your time and we'll go find somebody else. And quite frankly, I think they were really saying, we're not going to waste our time. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, just, you know, hey, listen, you know, I say yes. And, you know, you ask me a sponsor, I say, sure, fine. You know, what's it mean? You know, I mean, you know, listen, I'm not going to run around. I mean, the bottom line is they're the ones, the sponsees are the ones that they're responsible. You're not responsible for their sobriety. They're responsible for their sobriety. You're just responsible to be available. You're just available to answer questions, to sort of guide, to sort of help, to sort of do, you know. Sometimes you do an assignment, somebody say, you might want to read this, you might want to read that. I'm not the warden. You know what I mean? Listen, well, I don't even have the power to stop someone from drinking. Hey, you know, if they don't do it, if it's not going to be done, why should that hurt my ego? Why should I sit there and beat myself up or get mad at somebody because he's sick and he can't stop drinking? All I can do is help. If he can't accept the help, I'm not gonna shoot myself over. But that's, you know, that lesson is learned. How is that lesson learned? Because one of the things that the great thing about sponsoring people and doing kind of stuff is because you'll learn how to work with people. How do you learn how to work with people unless you get yourself into the clinic of working with people? It's incredible. You know? But you have to learn that, because we're alcoholics and we find that even without the alcohol, we got screwed up relationships with other people. We get codependent. We like depend on them. Our feelings get hurt. Did you know we're touchy? Did you know alcoholics are touchy? We are. I know you think you're sensitive. That's bullshit. You're not sensitive. As my sponsor used to say, great artists are sensitive. You know, you may be a great artist or a great author or something like that. You're still touchy. You're touchy and you're self-centered about everything, you know? And how do you get out? And that's why you're constantly getting all upset. That's why when you get in the traffic, you get upset. That's why when you're on the telephone, you get upset. That's why when the bill collectors call you up and get upset, they're just doing their job. Then it's nothing. Don't take it personal. You know what I mean? That's why the IRS, don't get mad at the IRS. They just want, I used to say, when I owed money, I said, why they want my money? He says, they want their money. You know, it's just a different way of looking at stuff. You know what I mean? But how do you learn that stuff? You got to go through the crap. How do you learn how to deal with alcoholics? How to deal with people? Listen, you want to learn how to deal with crazy people of all ilks in your life and not have it affect you. You just need to sponsor a lot of alcoholics. I'm not talking one or two. I'm talking about 30 or 40. You know what I mean? Because two are only going to call you up and one's going to drop off after that. You need to say yes to like 10 of them. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? In order to get one that's going to actually show up, you know, at the meeting to talk to you. But, you know, you start sponsoring these people. And you go through the, what am I going to do with these guys? You go through the aggravation and the worry and the thumb sucking and all the disappointment, you know, where they never do the thing, then they drink again and they say it's your fault because you're not a good sponsor. You know, you go through all the bullshit. And you go through that about 1,000 times. And after a while, you're like granite. It doesn't affect you. You understand? That's how you learn. It's great. Then you can go to meetings, discussion meetings and otherwise. Whatever's going on in the meeting, it doesn't bother you. As a matter of fact, they can even bother you out there. Because after you've been through the alcoholic car wash and you're dealing with these guys, you've been beaten up by that stuff, who could actually hurt you on the outside world? I mean, we got industrial strength toxicity in here. I mean, really. You know, they say every 10 people, an alcoholic affects 10 people. I mean, you look at what's going on out there, all the craziness is caused by us. No, really, because I'm absolutely sure. I'm absolutely certain as I sit here today, I bet my life on it. If you look at what's going on in Egypt and everything, somewhere deeply ingrained there, the loudest, craziest son of a bitch, you know what I mean, is an alcoholic, you know what I mean? An alcoholic, okay, he may not be drinking, okay? He may not be drinking, he may be sober, because I know they may not be drinking, but I can promise you this, he ain't going to meetings. He ain't going to meetings, you know? You know, they said, somebody once told me that, and I don't know if this is true or not, maybe somebody will research this, that Adolf Hitler was an alcoholic. He drank alcohol one time, went absolutely crazy, you know what I mean? Lost control, you know what I mean? And then he vowed never to drink it again, and he never drank it again after that. So that Adolf Hitler is a perfect example. He's a guy who's an alcoholic who doesn't drink, but doesn't go to meetings. Well, you know what I'm talking about. If you've been in AA just 5 seconds, you know what I mean? Long enough, you can meet some guy and watch him talk and see how he acts and say, that guy's an alcoholic. He says, and you know, sometimes they say, well, you know, I don't drink. I say, you really should. That's the problem. You really need to start. That's the only shot you got, you know what I mean? Because you're like holding it all together, you know? But you know, it's such a blast when you're out there. They talk about it in the book, the fellowship. You know, they say here and there, you know, a guy says, feel better, look better, having a better time. We laugh at Sir Sally. We know he's going to try the old game again. Because it's not about hanging in there and not drinking. He says, because he's not happy with his sobriety. And what happens is what God wants me to do is what he wanted Bill Wilson to do. He wants me to go out there, make disciples, help people, you know, serve people. He wants to be of service to people. He wants me to be a servant. Oh, man, that's great. I signed up. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought I'd be a superstar. I'm a servant. You're signing up to serve. That's it. That's the whole thing. You sign up to whatever you have to do to serve, whether it's make coffee or do. You're of service. I had a guy, and that's the people that I hung out with. You know, and that's what they say. What do they say? Our leaders are but trusted servants. You want to be a neat leader in AA? Be the biggest servant you can possibly be. You want to tell me about how bad you feel or how life isn't going for you well or you've been in AA for 5 years and things aren't going for you? I want to know this. What kind of servant? Where are you serving? How are you serving? Who are you serving? What kind of servant? He said, what kind of servant? What are you talking about? I'm talking about money. I'm talking about a job. I'm talking about I don't have a girlfriend, a boyfriend. I don't have a marriage. I'm talking about problems. I say, yo, where are you serving? What kind of servant are you? Are you serving as a sponsor? You're 5 years sober. Are you sponsoring anybody? Well, no, nobody asked me. Well, why isn't people asking you? I don't know. I don't know. Well, because you're not talking to meetings. Because you're not trying. You're not reading the book. You're not expressing. They don't want what you have. Because you sit back at meetings, you know, in the back of the room, just watch whatever in your throne of contempt, judging everybody and watching what they're saying, and you're not getting in there in the thick of things. You know? If I was you, because your life depends upon it, I'd grab some newcomer because they're dumb as dirt. They don't know anything. And tell them you're their sponsor, whether they like it or not, and, you know, just capture them or something, you know? First thing will happen is they'll drink, but you might stay sober, you know? You know, you got to, what are you doing? What are you doing for the room? What are you doing for AA? What's going on? You don't have to necessarily get up here and do a step series or stuff like that. It's all about the service. The guys that have the gratitude to God, like Bill Wilson, you know, it seems that some guys, those guys, have absolutely no problem serving. It seems that Bill Wilson, he says, the Lord has been so wonderful to me that I got to keep on talking about. They apparently are motivated. Their driving force is to give back to other people what God has graciously given to them. They buy into that crap that the only reason they're sober is because of God's grace, and they got to go up there and tell that's how grateful they are. Apparently that works. Apparently if you don't have that God thing going, after a while it sort of wears off, sobriety wears off, it becomes a usual thing, and you just think you're sort of like entitled to it. And you're just going to always have it, and it's not a big deal. It just has to do with going to meetings and doing a few things, and that lasts, what, 10 years, 5 years, 7 years until you drink again because you're not happy with your sobriety. Because it means nothing to you because you're not grateful because it didn't come from God. You think you did it. You think it has to do with you going to meetings and everything like that. And after a while it gets worn off. You really think you're doing it. You really think it's because you now know the inner workings of your mind. And so you stop going to meetings. You stop doing that stuff because you cured yourself. And next thing you know, you're drinking. And hanging out at some meetings, say, I had 7 years. You know what I mean? But I stopped going to meetings and I drank. And you don't have a clue. And it's all because you didn't believe in God. And you didn't devote your life to His. And you didn't lay your life on the line for Him. Hey, listen, I may be wrong about all this stuff. Well, you know, I don't think that. But you see, here's the deal. I'm going to close up now. Here's the interesting thing about this whole deal, you know. I don't know if you noticed this. I haven't really been looking at the books or something. I'm just telling you about what's going on in my life. You understand what I'm saying? I'm just trying to be authentic with you and tell you what's happening to me and what happened to me. That's all. I'm just telling you what the guy, and so, remember what he said, he sold himself short? Well, I'm just telling you, this is my life. You can't make this stuff up. What do you think it's some sort of script? You know, you think I went and I said, well, I'll tell him this, and I wrote this stuff up, and I like memorized this story, I'm telling you, if you want to know what makes this guy rock, what's going on with him? Why is he so excited? He must be on drugs or something. You know, what's going on? I'm telling you, this is what's work. Hey, listen, what is a step meeting for? What are we here for? Aren't I supposed to share my experience, strength, and hope? Aren't I supposed to tell you the truth? This is the truth. This is what's going on for me. You don't want it? Fine. It's not going to hurt my feelings. I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. He just tells me, go out there, throw some bread on the water, follow the message. Somebody's going to hear it. Somebody's going to take this thing up. Somebody's going to carry, you know, 20 years from now, all the guys that sponsored me, that did this thing with me, they're every one of them is dead. I love them. They're dead. I hope to see them again one day. They're dead, you know. 10, 15 years from now, I'm going to be dead. 5 years from now. Tomorrow, on the way home, who knows? You know what I mean? I may be dead. One of you guys is going to be talking in a meeting one day. You know, maybe you'll remember me, maybe not. You know, you're going to have 31 years, you're going to be slinging out the same stuff I'm slinging out. With the same people looking at you saying, what's he talking about? You know? You know? I'm just doing my job, you know? Ambassador in chains. God bless you. Thank you very much.